Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing? I mean, nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grief process. You know, with roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, that's about a third of the population. That means that everyone probably knows someone caring for a loved one. Join Dave and his guests now and every Wednesday at noon Pacific time as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. So find a comfortable place to relax, kick up your feet, and prepare to feel better and to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to get you through today and every day so you can survive your tomorrows. But not just survive, but to live life fully and abundantly. Yes, you heard me right. That is a possible goal to achieve. And now, here's your host, Dave Nassani. Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live globally through the Blog Talk Radio Network, as well as seven other audio and video platforms, including YouTube and iTunes and all those other places, where all our recorded podcasts and videocasts are saved for your later on-demand listening pleasure, including, of course, our website, caregiverscaregiver.com. And if that's too hard to remember, try davethecaregiver.com. That'll work also. Well, our goal here is to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. And we have an exciting show planned for you today with my lovely co-host, Adrian Gruberg. Say hello, Adrian.
Hello.
See, she's there. Founder of the Caregiver Space. Today, we'll be interviewing New York Times bestselling author Carmen Berry. But her most important role, of course, was that of a caregiver. So she has a lot to say. She's currently writing her 26th book and founder of the amazing Profitable Authors Institute. Yeah, I brought her on the show because many caregivers feel like there's a book inside of them that's just screaming to come out. And of course, caregivers have great stories inside of them. So stay tuned. You do not want to miss this show. I'm Dave Nassani, as I said, your caregiver's host. And this show is caregivers of every single kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring and selfless and sacrificial souls, but they have this tiny little problem. They are very prone to burnout. Now, we can learn something from the airlines, I like to say, including United, because they tell us in the event of an emergency, put your own oxygen mask on first before you attempt to help your little loved one with their mask. Well, you know why they tell us that? It sounds so selfish, doesn't it? I mean, a parent on a plane and the plane's nosediving and the mask falls and everyone's screaming and your kid is gasping for breath. Are you really going to put your mask on first selfishly before you help them? I mean, I don't know if I would, but that's what they say we should, because the airlines know so well that if we don't do that, if we don't put our needs above the needs of our loved ones, you will most likely black out and then you won't be any good to anybody with anything. You'll be like a dead caregiver. And then your loved one will probably die as well. So we don't want any of that. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects it have on us. It automatically throws us into this thing called the grief process. You know, anytime we suffer loss, we go through grief. And it could take days, it could take weeks, it could take months. I mean, there's no telling how long it could take to get through your grief. Everyone is different. But there is a way to get through grief. And that's to go through it. That's right. You can't go around it, under it, over it. No shortcuts. You got to go through the grief. So you might as well go through it as quickly as possible. And we can help you with that if you kind of feel like you're stuck. Hey, I want to thank my last week's guest, author and caregiver Nancy Workworth. She wrote Don't Stop the Music, Finding the Joy in Caregiving. See, there are great books inside of caregivers, like I said. And just a reminder, you can hear that interview and any of our interviews right on our website, caregiverscaregiver.com or davethecaregiver.com. Speaking of caregivers and books, hint, 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 I'm so excited that our long-awaited third book is getting closer and closer to becoming a reality. We'll let you all know when you can begin the pre-purchase process. It's called It's My Life Too, When to Say Yes and When to Say No, Thriving and Long-Term Caregiving. And we're believing that that will pre-sell 10,000 books to our caregiver Facebook fan base, which is huge. And hopefully it may allow us to make the New York Times bestselling list. I mean, we can hope and dream, can't we? But we'll definitely need all of your supporters' helps to achieve that goal. And I just
aim high.
Aim high. That's right. We'll shoot for 20,000 then, and if we get 10,000, we're still good. Hey, I just want to help as many caregivers as I can, and that's why I do what I do. And with God's help and yours, anything is possible. So thank you for allowing me to help you avoid burnout and survive the grief process. Right, enough of that. A very big welcome to Adrian, my lovely co-host, Adrian.
Hello. Thank you.
Carmen, Adrian, Carmen. And Carmen, welcome to the show. And thank you so much for agreeing to this interview today. I'm so excited to have you on.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, good. She's excited.
Excuse me. I love it. When,
I love it when our guests are excited. That's a good sign. I just need to tell the audience, I met Carmen through a very dear friend and author of mine, and Carmen has been invaluable to me in getting this third book of mine in its present state for the last 2 years. I mean, instead of just bouncing these books out in 30 or 60 days like I was going to do and like I did with my other two books, they both insisted that I take time with this one, which is very hard for me to take time and slow down and do all of that. Because, you know, I'm a doer and I'm an entrepreneur and I like to get things done. And this is just like being pregnant, you know, for like 2 years. 9 months is long enough, you know. So it was really hard for me to do that. But I'm glad I listened. And sometimes I was sorry I listened, but today I'm glad I listened.
Good.
I took her courses from her Profitable Authors Institute, and it made me a better writer. And she helped me with my editing, my organizing, and really helped me make it what I think is my best book so far. And
good.
I know I'm prejudiced, and I shouldn't say that. Others should say that, but I'm going to say it. So thank you, Carmen, for your assistance. You really helped me polish this book. So it's kind of like I'm spit. And she's polished, you know.
That's the nicest thing anyone said to me today.
That's such an old joke. Only old people will get that. Okay. So, Carmen, why don't you take a minute or two and introduce yourself? Just who is Carmen Berry and why was she put on this earth?
Well, I was a social worker originally. I wanted to help everybody. So I went into the helping career and worked with children of child abuse. And I burnt to a crisp in 4 years. Poof. I didn't do very well at all. And I put my ideas into a book, and I was able to turn that awful experience into something positive. So way back in 1987, I published my first book called When Helping You Is Hurting Me.
What a great title.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't come up with it. I wish I could take credit, but it's a very good title. And so then for the next several decades, I wrote books and did social work and went back and forth. And then I decided to adopt a child, and I took some time off and went to Nepal and came back. And now I'm a book coach. I've recently co-founded Profitable Authors Institute. And that is based on the idea that I'm gathering together quite a few publishing professionals and experts in different areas so that we can together be a resource for aspiring authors.
Great idea. Was that your idea?
Yeah, it was my idea.
Wow, Carmen, you're brilliant. She's brilliant.
Now
Adrian's
I have
brilliant too. I have two brilliant people on my show at the same time.
Brilliant women.
Brilliant women.
Yes.
Where are you originally from, Carmen?
Southern California. I was born here.
I thought you were going to say New York, like Adrian. I thought all the great, brilliant women came from New York.
Okay. Well, a couple of them come from Southern California. And
I know.
We're both living in high rent districts.
It's so rare to find anybody who was born in California because, you know, everyone kind of imported in here. My cousin lives in Nashville, and she says that everyone from L.A. is leaving L.A. and going to Nashville. And she bought me the shirt that says Nashville is the new L.A. And it was true. We went to a restaurant, and like 80% of the people who I met from L.A., I'm from L.A., San Fernando Valley, whatever. So I don't know.
Well, they originated in the Midwest.
I said last week when they start saying that Nashville is the new, you know, the
LA Nashville, is the new
Nashville. Yeah, LA is the new Nashville. You'll.
Yeah. You know, the only reason I stay here is because of the weather. You know, the politicians are frustrating, but we won't talk about that. Okay, Carmen, before we talk about what you do for potential authors, I'd love for you to share your caregiving experiences so our listeners can relate more to you. Take some more time and talk about, you know, what was in your mind. I mean, why did you want to help people and you know, the different jobs that you've had? Just go into a little more detail with that. Our caregiving audience really know that you're one of them, you know, and then they'll give you their undivided attention.
There were some good reasons I went into caregiving, and there were some not very healthy reasons I went into caregiving.
Explain both. That'd be great.
Okay. Well, the healthy reason is I think that we're here and on this planet to help each other and to love each other and be in relationship. So to that degree, I think it's the purpose for everyone to be connected, to be contributing and involved. But I got a little carried away with it, and I bought into this, what I call the Messiah trap, which is two different lies. One is that if I don't do it, it won't get done. And the second lie is everyone else's needs take priority over mine. So when I'm feeling good, I feel like I'm the only one who can handle things. And then when I'm feeling down, I'm thinking like I don't matter and I have to sacrifice myself. So those are the two lies I bought into that basically, you know, puts you on the road to codependency and not taking good care of yourself.
You're so right. Adrian, isn't that, she hit it right on the head.
Right on.
And
very direct, right on.
So articulate.
That's what I did in my early 30s. I burnt to a crisp. And, you know, I think once you buy into that, it's pretty hard not to fall into it from time to time.
Yeah.
But I try very hard to stay balanced. I have hobbies, and I'm involved in different things that are fun. Probably not enough, but to some degree. And my most recent caregiving experience was the last couple of years of my mother's life. She passed away in 2012. And we lived together. I took care of her. She was in the hospital for a while. She broke her hip. And then I brought her home for hospice and was there with her at the end. So that was my most recent challenge of straight ahead, real caregiving.
Mm-hmm. Tell me, how did you know? You say you were burnt to a crisp. How did you know that you were burnt out? What were some of your symptoms? And, you know, in case somebody's having some of these symptoms, they can realize that they're that far away from burning to a crisp, unless they like their meat well done, like my father likes his steaks, like burnt.
Well, there's, you know, you're stressed out, but then there's burnout, which I was having sleep problems. I was having panic attacks. I was really depressed, losing weight. I caught every flu and cold and everything that came by. My immune system was really bad. And basically, I just got to the point where I really couldn't function. I was so stressed out and so sick and yucky that I quit my job. I was able to get a loan, and I hung out in therapy and group therapy and got my act back together.
Wow.
So you were the sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Yeah, that's right.
How did you take that leap? Did somebody come into your life and say, Carmen, you know, did you have like an intervention, or did you all figure it out yourself? I mean, what was the process?
Well, you know, when you're that burnt out, you're just not doing well. I just wasn't functioning well, and the depression was bad. And this was way back when, before, you know, they had medication and stuff. I mean, I guess there was something, but now you can get on medication and deal with some of these things. We have a lot more insight. But this was way back in the 80s when, you know, I was just considered weak. I was weak and defective, and I couldn't carry my load. And I just checked out.
Can you Can you relate, Adrian?
I can relate to the comments, yeah, but I know I was medicated in the 80s, so I mean,
oh, okay.
She had the right doctor.
Yeah, I had the right doctor. But
I guess New York got
I've
those
heard
before
those
California.
Comments before, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, I recommend, I always say this jokingly, but if you're going to burn out and be a little pathetic. And because you kind of like go one way or the other, you burn out and you're kind of pathetic and people feel sorry for you. Or you can burn out in a rage. You know, you tell everybody off, you tell your boss off, you break up with your spouse or whatever. You go down in a rage and then everybody's mad at you. So if you're going to burn out kind of pathetic, because then people feel sorry for you and they'll take you back. So I was a pathetic person.
Good point.
That noise?
I think it's because Carmen doesn't have a headset, and every now and then an echo comes on.
Gotcha.
Do you want me to put on a headset?
Should we try it? Maybe it'll be better.
How does this work?
Can you hear me?
Is that better? Uh-huh.
I think so. We'll see if it's better.
Okay. Here's all messed up. That's important.
You look great.
Okay, how's that? Is that better?
Good.
It's good.
So there wasn't really a friend who came and says, Carmen, we have to talk, you know, like an intervention. You just kind of figured it out yourself.
Yeah, I was pretty obvious. Yeah. I didn't need anybody to tell me I was a mess.
Well, see, she's brilliant. Okay. Well, before, let me just say, you know, I always say that caregivers need hobbies and outlets, you know, to help them avoid burnout. And what greater outlet than writing a book? And I know that we have potential authors out there who are listening and who have a potential book inside of them. I mean, I read their stories online all the time, and I'm saying, my God, this stuff, I mean, you can't write stuff like this, you know?
But you can't make it up, huh?
Can't make it up.
You can't make it up. It's just too original and too perfect. But of course, the people I'm talking to are like burned out, fried to a crisp, like you said. And they can't even imagine writing anything, you know, but one day they may come to a point where they say, you know what, the worst is over. I think I can gather my thoughts, gather my notes. Maybe I can write some memoirs or write a book. And, you know, whether it's published or not, it doesn't matter, because like Adrian said, it's a very therapeutic process, even just journaling and stuff like that. But for the ones who are ready and they want to write and they need, you know, like a midwife to help them birth this thing, Carmen, you're the perfect midwife for them, because, you know, you are a caregiver, or you were a caregiver. And I think we're always a caregiver. We're always caregiving somebody. Mm-hmm. So what's the process for those caregivers who want to take the first step? You know, even if they really, even if it's mistakenly, if they think that they're just too busy to even scratch their head to do it with all their caregiving duties. Any advice for those particular people?
Well, for me, writing was a lot of my therapy. And so for me, putting things into words, trying to put categories on them, trying to understand it was really, really important. But I make the distinction between a writer and an author. A writer is somebody, I mean, we're all writers. Well, if you can write, you're a writer. You know, you're going to write thank you notes. You're going to write notes. So you're going to write in your journal, whatever. And so to that degree, everyone can be a writer, and everyone can benefit from the writing process to help you sort out what's going on or express your feelings,
right,
et cetera. But an author is somebody who actually creates a product. And so when you decide you want to become an author, it's a different process. You are creating a product that you're going to sell to someone else. And sometimes we use author and writer interchangeably, but they're really different. When you're going to become an author, you have to focus on what your reader needs, not what you need. And so the first draft of anybody's book really is about themselves. It's for themselves. But the second and the third drafts, the big rewrites, are really to change the material around and make sure that you're creating a product that will sell in the marketplace. That is a shift And it can be really hard for some people because they want to write a book that is satisfying to them. But if you really want to be an author, you've got to write a book that's going to be satisfying to somebody else and help them, not just be an outlet for you.
Yeah. Well, that's like me. My first book was just about me and my wife. It was my story, you know, and mm-hmm. I basically, you know, I sold a few hundred of them, but I've got a lot of them in my garage. And the person who taught me how to write a book in 30 days says, this is my business card. You know, somebody asked for a business card to stick your book in the fish tank, you know. And I give a lot of copies away to people who really need to hear it. And, you know, it costs me like $1 a piece. It's cheap and they're all paid for anyway with the books that I've already sold. So you're right. That book was really for me and it can help other people as well. But this book is specifically for caregivers. You know, anybody can read that other book. But this book is for caregivers. And so that's why you guys were very helpful in leading me and guiding me and helping me to not make those mistakes. So that's awesome.
Well, you really have to ask two important questions. First of all, is what does the reader need to know? And what order does the reader need to know it? And just because it's interesting to you or it's a really important story in your life doesn't mean it belongs in the book. Mm. And that's the real shift from writer to author. And I don't know that anybody can do it alone. I've never written a book by myself. I mean, I've been the sole author of books, but I've needed my agent and my editors and people to help me. I've never been able to do it completely by myself. And so I really recommend, whether you get a book coach or an editor or take a course or whatever is involved, that you really do engage with other people to help you turn yourself from a writer into an author.
Yeah. And I know that you're really, really good. And then, you know, Lynn, my friend, was telling me why you're really good. You've written 26 books. Many of them were bestsellers.
Close to 30 now.
You're kidding. Last time you were on the show, you were writing your 26th, and that was 2 years ago.
Wow.
You just crank them out.
Yeah, I write pretty fast.
Yeah.
And many of them were bestsellers. And in fact, tell us about your New York Times bestseller. How that happened?
Well, that was a book I co-authored with a girlfriend of mine. Her name is Tamara Trader. And we wrote a book on friendship, women's friendship. And if you can believe it, way back then, that was in the middle 90s, mid-95 it came out, there were no books on women's friendship. I mean, they're all over the place now, but there was nothing on the market.
Yeah.
Two other books came out when ours did, and they were both written by individual women. I think our book did better because women friends talking about our friendships. We interviewed 100 women and we put their stories together. Oprah put us on her show and then boom, everything took off. So
that's what you need.
That's what you needed back then, especially.
Good old Oprah.
So that's such a weird topic because, you know, you'll watch on situation comedy television shows and two girls talking together and she says, oh, she's so beautiful. And she goes, yeah, I know, I hate her. You know, it's like, what kind of language is that? You know, it's like, are women really that catty and jealous?
I don't think so.
You know, or they say it in jest, you know, it's like, oh, I wish I was, you know, as good looking as her. I wish my hair was, you know, whatever. Tell us a little more about that dynamic because it's very interesting. And we have two women on the show, so I bet you can both share a little.
I don't think that women are that catty. I think that, at least not in my experience, that and not in our interviews. I think that women who are bonded together take care of each other. They're there for each other. They stick by each other and defend each other. So my experience with women that are my deep, deep, close friends, I never worry about. They've got my back.
Mm. So what can you remember a question that Oprah asked you that about the book? What was like the highlight of that particular book that really grabbed people and was the spark that made it a bestseller? Do you remember?
Well, oddly enough, the book that was on Oprah was not the book that took off.
Oh, really?
We had written also a book called The Girlfriend's Keepsake Book. where you and a girlfriend would write down, you would basically buy the book for your friend, and then you would write down all these things you remember about her and then give it to her as a gift. So I don't know if you know, but Gail King is Oprah's best friend.
Yeah.
So Gail King was on the show, and she was telling all, you know, telling all these secrets about Oprah. And so it really was about different friends that used the book. And then our narrative book is the one that called Girlfriends that went on the New York Times bestseller list.
That's something. Any comments, Adrian, about Girlfriends?
Well, I mean, I've had my best girlfriend since the seventh grade. And
wow, still?
We went through a period in college where we sort of went different ways. And then we got back together in college because we were both in Boston. And then I moved to Atlanta and she was in New York, but we were still in constant touch. The only thing that really separated us was I was getting divorced while she was having babies.
Wow.
And she couldn't relate to me, even though I could relate to what she was going through. And I guess it's just because so many people around me were having babies, and God knows there were enough people around me getting divorces as well, but not around her. Yeah. So she wasn't familiar with the experience. So we couldn't share that until I was sort of resettled. And then since then, she's always been there for me and I've always been there for her. And it's wonderful. I have a cousin who's my best friend. We would do anything for each other. Yeah.
Well, listen, we're going to take a break and we'll be right back. We've got a lot more to talk about, so don't go away.
Anytime we suffer loss, we grieve. And a lot of people don't realize what even the grief process is. But it could be 5 to 7 steps ranging from denial, I don't believe this is happening, anger, oh my gosh, I'm so upset this is happening, to a form of bargaining, how can I get out of this, to depression, which is a very serious thing because that often leads to suicide. And then finally, after you realize you have no more control over your situation and you're totally okay with the new normal that it brings, that wonderful, wonderful place called acceptance.
Being a caregiver takes a special person with passion and compassion. But even you can become a little burned out from time to time. The Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show was developed to help you overcome obstacles, adversity, and burnout, as well as just having a place to rest, relax, and recharge your batteries. We've all been there, and you're not alone. Now, you can take the Caregiver's Caregiver with you. Get the top 25 radio shows in convenient form that plugs right into your USB car stereo or computer. Learn the techniques, tips, and encouragement we all need to better handle the day-to-day challenges. For around $1 per show, just $29.77, get the credit card-sized USB card to have with you anytime you need a caregiver's pick-me-up. Just go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com and order yours today. Go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com now. Consider it an investment in you and ultimately an investment in them.
And we're back with Carmen Berry and Adrian Gruberg, my co-host. And we're talking about burnout and writing and authoring and the difference. Let's touch on burnout again, Carmen. Burnout, which is normally a bad thing, often can change a person into someone even stronger and greater than they were, even achieving things that before was not even conceivable in their minds. I mean, look at you, right? All this stuff came out of your darkest hour. But now, can you comment on this as it relates to some of your personal experiences, others that you know, who were burned out and use that bad, negative stuff to achieve new heights?
Yeah, I think there's people that like they keep achieving and they succeed and their life gets, they sort of build on their successes. And I'm not that kind of a person. My life has been with some real drops. And what I found is that if you're really open and you're honest and you allow God to work in your life, those are the moments that are the most transformative. I don't know that I'd be an author today if I hadn't burnt out. I probably would be a social worker and be running some big agency somewhere. But instead, my whole life fell apart. And out of that, I had a brand new career. And I'd always wanted to write. I always wanted to be an author, but I didn't know how to get there. And this was the door that opened for me.
Well, that's really good. Like I said, a lot of people may be thinking about writing, and maybe there's a book inside of them. Maybe they're even an author. But how can someone decide whether they, let's say they've written a lot of things, they've gotten a little further. What steps should they take to see if their writing can perhaps be translated into a book, and a good book, and that might even sell?
Well, I think the best way to do that is to find a book coach or an editor or somebody that you trust that can help you. Mm-hmm. I'll put a little plug in for Profitable Authors Institute. What we do is we provide the information you need in order to turn your writing into a book, and then how to publish it and promote it. So we're really focused on authors and helping authors make a plan so that they'll actually make a profit. If you just want to write and for your own self, then you don't need to go through that discipline. But to actually compete in the market, there is a process that you need to go through.
Carmen, do you specialize in a particular type of book? Are they all self-help books or in that vein, or do you have novelists and?
Yeah, I mean, my specialty is self-help, and that's basically what I do. Mm-hmm. But I realized in my coaching that my people that came to me needed all kinds of coaching, which I didn't do. And they also needed more information about publishing and promotion that is right. Not my specialty. So we have experts, we have memoir writers, we have novelists, mystery writers, we have all different kinds of writers.
That's great.
That can give you a different approach. Then we have a track on publishing the way it is right now. And then we're releasing another track this month in May. On promotion. Plus, we've invited David to be one of our instructors on our faculty to talk about radio and how you promote books through radio, since he is so good at that.
So you're talking about me?
Yes, I am. Oh, very excited to add him to the faculty.
Thank you. I'm honored. I think this radio show is 3 years old now. We've done about almost 150 shows. Time flies. Adrian, you've been with me for over a year, maybe a year, 3 months or something like that. That's like you just came on yesterday. My gosh.
And well, she is so busy. To learn.
I know I was doing it when I was in California last February, and I had started before then. So, it's been a while.
And Adrian, for those of you who you don't know, Adrian is the busiest person I know. I mean, it's hard to get. Oh, come on. If you call her up, you always get her voicemail. Not me now. I know she's taking my calls now, but I could never get a hold of her. And, you know, it would take her a long time to answer her emails because she's just very busy. She's doing caregiver stuff. But to commit to this 1 hour weekly thing for over a year, I'm flattered and I'm thank you so much. I know it's not easy, but I guess she's got it in her schedule now, and so now it's just like second nature.
Flexible schedule.
we were flexible. We keep changing the time sometimes. She started a writing course. How's that going, by the way?
Good, very good.
You learning anything?
Every time I write something, I learn something.
You know, that's the thing about writing and being an author is that you change. It changes you.
Yeah.
The writing process helps you clarify your ideas and moves you forward. And then the author process also does. When you try to get outside yourself and communicate your message mm-hmm. without you being the center of the universe, that also changes you.
Yeah, one of my biggest bad habits that Carmen and Lynn were always telling me is, this is not Charlene's book. She has a book. This is your book to caregivers, because, you know, and so I'll start writing to caregivers, and then Charlene sneaks in again, you know, and why is that, Carmen? What causes that?
Well, I don't know exactly. I mean, I think that's just our natural focus on our story, and your story and her story are so intertwined.
Yeah.
But the real challenge is to write your book for your reader and not for Charlene or for you. But ultimately, we had to find your voice as you speak to the reader. So it's a great book. It's going to really be looking forward to it really getting published and moving forward.
So are you helping Dave find publishers to show the book, to present the book to? And
Lynn is doing that. Lynn was her co-author in Daddies and Daughters.
Lynn is who
introduced me to Carmen.
Okay.
So, yeah, Lynn and I were friends for a long time, and then we co-authored a book called Daddies and Daughters back in the late 90s, and it did really well. It did really well.
Because like I said, I was so many times, I says, I'm just going to self-publish this book. My readers needed it 2 years ago, and I'm still, you know, rewriting it. I went in Hawaii, I read it 4 different times. So this is like the 100th time. And, you know, I'm not a reader. I don't like to read, really. But when you're forced to read your own book over and over and over and over again.
Did you read it out loud?
Many times I would read it out loud, yes.
Okay.
So, yeah, it helps to read it. And each time I would read it, I would find some more things. And then I'd read it again, and I'd think it would be perfect. And I'd find more things, you know, different things. And so, you know, each time there were less and less and less things to find, because that's the point. You know, when is the book done? When is it perfect? Or will it ever be perfect, you know? When
will the book be perfect?
When do you stop writing?
My first editor told me that no book is ever finished. It just goes to the printer.
Right.
I kept wanting to rewrite it and rewrite it and rewrite it. And finally, he just took it out of my hands and sent it to the printer. And I was so depressed and mad at him. I spent most of the time mad at him. But he was right. And there are no perfect books. But once they can communicate to your reader and you've got spell check, then you move on. And yours is
in good shape. Yeah.
I mean, and if you get into second and third and fourth printings, you can always add stuff.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I pick up.
Someone approved.
I've picked up a book right off the shelf, and I'm just thumbing through it, and I saw a typographical error, you know, and I says, how did this get through? And even my first two books, I mean, I went over that with a fine tooth comb. The minute the printer gives it to me, I open it up, and there is a typo. And I says, how did I miss that? So on one of my books, because I immediately fixed them on the file so that the next printing will be, you know, more perfect and so on. But it's weird like that. I was late with the first break, so let me take another break and we will be right back. Please don't go away.
One arm, one leg, 100 words, overcoming unbelievable hardships is about Charlene, a stroke survivor. Back in 1996, Charlene was a healthy, normal, very active 52-year-old woman whose amazing talents resemble that of both a Martha Stewart and a Wonder Woman. But all that changed when she suffered a massive stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on the right side. Who am I? My name is David, I've had the privilege of being Charlene's husband since 1975. We had a wonderful, fairy tale, storybook-like courtship that culminated in our marriage a year later. Charlene had just come out of a marriage where, after 10 years, she received two black eyes and a broken nose by her former husband when he came home high on speed. Charlene believed in no second chances of any kind for abuse, so she left. Finding herself all alone in the world with her 5 and 10-year-old daughters, Cynthia Lorraine and Deborah Lynn, she started raising them by herself for the next 2 years. Then fate brought us all together. After falling in love with Charlene, Cindy, and Debbie, our love then produced Rebecca Elizabeth. We had a wonderful, normal life for the next 20 years. But today, things are very different for everyone. One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships, is the amazing story of a woman's fight to survive all that life had thrown her way. Everyone who knows Charlene is thoroughly amazed at how she lives day by day, month by month, year by year, and with a smile on her face and hope in her heart that everything is going to be okay. Her faith in God is her foundation in this hope, that everything happens for a reason, and what doesn't kill her will make her stronger. She inspires everyone who meets her. Her accomplishments since her stroke are very impressive, often making us normal people look like whiners and complainers. So pick up your copy of One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today. You won't be disappointed. Just hear what best-selling author Lynn Barrington has to say about it. If you think you have it bad, read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy and Dove Award recipient, the godfather of contemporary gospel Christian music, Andre Crouch? Charlene just won't let the promises of God go. And she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. You'll be encouraged by her testimony, regardless of what you're going through. Available everywhere, but if you purchase your copy directly from the author's website, onearmoneleg100words.com, Charlene and David will personally autograph your copy. Enjoy!
We're back with Carmen Berry and Adrian Gruberg, and that was Lynn, who I was talking about. That was their book, Daddies and Daughters, that they wrote together. That was an interesting book, wasn't it? What was the premise of that book? How the relationship of a, you know, daddy's little girl and all that stuff?
Yeah, we interviewed, Lynn interviewed a lot of people. I didn't do much interviewing. And we traced the daddy and daughter relationship from the beginning through to the end. The interesting or odd coincidence was that when we finished the book, before it went to the printer, before it went, was actually published, my father passed away.
Oh.
And so I had to rewrite the ending. And it was that was a very stressful time because he had an accident. He was trimming a tree and the tree limb snapped and knocked him over. It was really horrible. And it broke his neck, broke his leg. So it took, he passed away in about 4 months. And then we had to go and promote the book after his passing. And it was extremely hard.
Be hard.
Yeah, it was really hard. And, you know, Lynn, looking back, she just said that I just wasn't there. You know, I was in so much grief. And then to talk about dads on top of that, it was really hard. So she carried most of the weight on that. Mm-hmm. I just was not in a good place.
Well, hey, when you were writing your first caregiver book, When Helping You Is Hurting Me, that's a great title.
Great title.
Were you still in a burnout state while you were writing that? And if you were, you know, was actually writing it a therapeutic experience for you?
Yeah, the writing experience was part of the therapy for me because I didn't understand, you know, how I got there. And in the process of sorting it out, I came up with the concepts of the Messiah trap. And I identified different types of what I call the messiahs, different people who were running around acting like they were God and they weren't. So I put that together, and it was very much part of the therapeutic experience for me.
So you said you were fried to a crisp. You actually began writing while you were fried to a crisp? I mean, is that possible?
Well, I'm not sure that I actually was writing. I think I was trying to understand it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I was writing reflections and that kind of stuff. And I can put things into systems. So I made little charts and that kind of thing so I could understand it. But no, I didn't really start writing the book until about a year and a half later.
So let's take a scale of 1 to 10. Let's say 10 is fried to a crisp and 0 is healthy. Where were you on the burnout scale? What I'm really trying to ask is, how long does it take when you're at a 10 to get down to, you know, some normal number, whatever that normal number is? How long does it take to unburn out? And where were you when you started writing it? What number?
It took me about a year. I left my job and I was supporting myself through writing grants and loans and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have to hold down a regular job. I didn't have to be anywhere. I didn't have to take care of anyone. I really did focus on myself for a year, and I put my ideas together, and then I was able to get a book contract. After I got the book contract, I wrote the book.
And you didn't even have an agent at that time.
No, it was one of those fluky things.
God things.
A guy I knew from college married an editor from HarperCollins, and she gave me the introduction. Then I took it from there. Then I was able to, you know, have a, I was, they took my meeting, I pitched them my book idea, and then I got the contract. The thing about nonfiction self-help books is usually you do not write them before you get the contract. That's changing more and more now when you're self-publishing, but I've never written a book, actually written the book and finished the book until after I got a contract.
I have a question. Right now, it seems as though the number of caregiving guidebooks has reached critical mass. I mean, how much credence can you give people who keep bringing you books? There's so many self-help books. So many self-help books for various parts of caregiving. I mean, it's broken down. It's the minutiae at this point.
Well, here's the thing to remember about the way the publishing world works, and especially now, because anybody can be published.
Yes.
You just have to upload your book, and then you're published. Boom.
Right.
So the reality is that only 10% of published authors are making a profit, and only 4% are really knocking it out of the ballpark.
Okay.
So when you think about who your competition is the top 10%.
Right.
90% of people are publishing their books and they don't know what they're doing. They're not your real competitors. Your competitors are the top 10%. So yes, there could be thousands of books being published today, and thousands of books will be published tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But most of those books are not well written, they're not properly edited, the layout isn't good, the covers are bad, and so they're not your competitors. They're not your competitors. Your competitors are the people, the authors who know how to be authors, not people who know how to upload their books.
Right.
So in some ways, nothing's changed. What has changed is the access to the internet, but the quality books, and that's one of the reasons why I started my company, was because so many people are disappointed. They're putting their heart and soul into their books, and then they're publishing them, and they don't know what they don't know. They don't know that they're not in the game. You need to get in the top 10% to really be a profitable author, and that's what we teach people how to do. I wouldn't worry about all the other books that are glutting the market, because only a few of them are going to be really successful. That's your competition.
That makes sense.
Yep.
Adrian, as it relates to burnout, did you ever not take your own advice in your book when Helping You Hurts Me?
You mean me?
Yeah. Did I say Adrian? I meant Carmen.
Yes.
Yeah. Great question for you too.
Oh, I don't get my advice all the time. Yeah. You know, it was about a year ago. I thought, I'm going to read this book again. So I sat down and I read it and I thought, man, I had so much insight, but I didn't know how to implement this in any consistent way. I mean, I did make progress, but it's so easy to get hooked into, you know, when somebody else is in crisis, it really does feel like you're the only one who can help them. And it feels like you need to sacrifice yourself. That may be true in a moment, or in a short period of time. You know, my mother was passing away. She was my priority. That was the right thing to do. But to live like that year in and year out, you can't make it. You can't do it. So it as life comes at you, you have to revamp and say, okay, I'm important, but I'm not the most important. And I am important, but not the most important. So you get to take your turn, like your book title, you know? It's your life too.
But there certainly are a lot of people, David can attest to it, who do this for years and years and years, you know, and
they burn out. And that's why it's important to get a balance so that you take care of yourself. And, you know, one of the things I really liked about Dave's book is a concept that, yes, you may be able to take care of your loved one the best. I mean, you understand them. You've got the routine. You know how to read them. But, you know, there are other people who can help them fine. They can do a good job. They can do an adequate job. And you can take time off and take care of yourself. There are moments when you have to be there. But there are a lot of moments you don't.
Right.
And that's one of the really good concepts I got from his book, or helping him, was like, I'm not the only person who can do this.
Hey, I can't believe how fast this hour has gone. We have run out of time. Thank you guys so much for coming on the show. Carmen, how can you be reached if someone wants to speak with you, or they want to sign up for your author institute, or get some kind of estimate, you know, to see what it would cost to help them?
Well, you can go to carmenberry.com, and from there you can find everything else. I've just started a new blog called Live More and Stress Less. So you can carmenberry.com, or you can go to profitableauthorsinstitute.com.
So that's Carmen, because some people spell Carmen differently, and Berry, Berry.com.
And that's correct. Like
Adrian,
a strawberry.
How... How do we get a hold of Adrian and the caregiver space with 160,000 followers? My gosh, or almost.
Finally, just.
Did you get there yet?
I have to look. It may be today. It's adrian@thecaregiverspace.org, and it's ADRIENNE. And then the website is www.thecaregiverspace.org. And the Caregiver Space is the page on Facebook. Go to the site and just go to one of the many social media links.
Okay. Well, again, a reminder, all our live shows become recorded pod and video casts on our website, caregiverscaregiver.com. And while you're there, take our short quiz, see if you're a candidate for burnout. And just for doing that, I'm going to send you my very first book I wrote, a $10 value that's still getting rave reviews, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships, my wife's amazing story about our life. Carmen, Adrian, everyone listening, thank you so much. Until next Wednesday, may God richly bless you guys. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific Time, and anytime afterwards on podcast To catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process, right here on the Worldwide Block Talk Radio Network. Goodbye.